are listening to the August 21st, 2017 edition of The Best Ball Show, a special RotoViz radio miniseries. I'm Todd Burrows on Twitter at Todd from PA, and joining me on this episode is special guest Nick Giffen, the editor-in-chief here at RotoViz. You can find him on Twitter at RotoDoc. Nick has written an article on why 2017 is the ideal year to use the zero running back strategy. So we'll ask Nick to explain the basics of zero RB for those who might not know it, and why he thinks this year is the perfect year to implement this strategy. Then Nick will give you some of his favorite zero running back candidates for this year, and even some early running backs to avoid. This is our second to last episode in this mini-series, as most sites that do best ball leagues have a cutoff date to start new leagues in the next 7 to 10 days. That means the season is right upon us, and you can get ready for it with a RotoViz NFL Pass, which you can get right now for 30% off. This discount is for podcast listeners only, and it's available through the NFL podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast. Your subscription gives you unlimited access to all our NFL content and tools, and it also helps to support the pod. Also, you can support the pod by subscribing to and rating the RotoViz radio channel on iTunes. Do that and you'll be eligible to compete against some of the RotoViz podcasters and writers in a $35 entry best ball league hosted by our friends at the FFPC. The winner of each league will receive a year-long RotoViz pass on top of the cash prize. Go to iTunes, leave a review with your name on it, and then email us at rotovizradio@gmail.com and we'll get you in the league. And now, let's bring in our guest. Please welcome to the show, the editor-in-chief at RotoViz, Nick Giffen, also known as RotoDoc. Doc, how you doing today?
Hey, Todd, I'm doing great. I'm on a bit of a road trip here in Idaho Falls, Idaho. I've never been to Idaho before, but I'm here for the solar eclipse, and that's tomorrow, so pretty exciting stuff, but yeah, I'm ready to talk some best ball.
Isn't this like an every 99 years thing?
The eclipses themselves aren't, we're going to have another one in 7 years in the U.S., but this one's really rare because it's the first one in 99 years to cross the whole continental United States. So definitely a very, very rare event.
Gotcha. It's kind of like Matt Sims crushing preseason and tilting me.
There you go. Yeah. There's no tilting though with a solar eclipse unless there's some clouds in the way or something like that.
Yeah. That's true. That would suck. Go all the way to Idaho and then have like rain.
Yeah. Well, we're set for a beautiful day tomorrow, so I think we're good to go. Knock on wood.
Good. Well, I'm glad to have you on. I'm glad we're going to be talking zero running back. For those of our listeners who might not be familiar with zero running back, could you please give a little history of how zero running back started and what it is?
Yeah, so zero running back's been around for a while, but when it really took off kind of in the 2013-2014 year. So it really took off with Sean Siegel writing about his experiences drafting in a zero RB style back in 2013, and his important article that came out in November of 2013 was after draft season, but it's called Zero RB Anti-Fragility and the Myth of Value-Based Drafting. And so the whole point of the article is to talk about how value-based drafting can be very fragile. If your projections are wrong or if players get injured, then your draft is going to be very fragile, very sensitive to those incorrect projections or those injuries that come up. So then he said, well, there's another type of draft strategy, and that's a robust strategy. You could draft lots of the same position so that when an injury comes, your roster is a little resilient. But that isn't quite going to make, if one of your players gets injured in a robust draft strategy, that's still not going to make your roster better. So anti-fragile, an anti-fragile strategy is a strategy that when fragility happens, when things break, when things get stressed out and the system gets stressed, your roster actually improves from all the fragility. So it's an anti-fragile roster that improves as everything else happens. And in NFL terms, this is when players fail to meet their projections, when they get injured, things like that. And so the idea is running backs are one of the hardest positions, if not the hardest position, to project accurately. There's multiple reasons for it. A lot of times running backs are susceptible to game flow, or they are a lot more variable, whether they have a chance of getting a lot of touchdowns or not. And then, of course, there's the injury factor. And so the idea is to avoid taking those positions, the running back position, in the high leverage rounds of your draft. So rounds 1 through 5 in your fantasy draft. So take no running backs in those first 5 rounds and instead load up on the more predictable position of wide receiver and even tight end, which has a little more predictability, and build your roster in a safer way so that you get those high leverage round with safer players that will guarantee you a lot of points, not necessarily guarantee you, but have a much higher probability of getting you a high score than running backs, which are very fragile in the grand scheme of things. And so you're literally not taking any running backs in the first 5 or 6 rounds, and that's why it's called zero RB.
Most people assume zero running back means, as you mentioned, draft a lot of wide receiver early. You did mention tight end, but what is your strategy for quarterback and tight end in zero running back drafts?
Yeah, so there's a little bit of a different philosophy I use in best ball leagues versus redraft leagues. In redraft leagues, I'm much more likely to go late round quarterback and go two early tight ends. And the reason is I think I can pick 2 very good quarterbacks still later in the draft in best ball leagues and be happy with that and not really need a third quarterback. Whereas in tight end, I like taking 2 early tight ends because they project in terms of overall ADP. If you were to take a wide receiver, let's say pick 38 overall, then the average wide receiver you take around pick 38 and the average tight end you take around pick 38 tend to score the same amount of points. So I like grabbing the tight ends because they're a much more shallow position overall. Once you get past the first 5 or 6 tight ends, there's really the drop off becomes significant at the tight end position. And so I like grabbing 2 of those elite tight ends, really gaining edge not only at the tight end position, but then having the ability to play that other tight end in the flex in a best ball league as well, because very often they'll score similar to the same number of points or even higher than the same number of points as any wide receiver you could have picked in there. So I've shown this in a couple different articles over at RotoViz. So that's my strategy for best ball, is to take 2 tight ends early. And in redraft, I like taking 2 quarterbacks late. But in best ball, I have a different strategy. Sometimes I'll reach and even grab a Tom Brady or Drew Brees is the 2 guys I've really been targeting this year in the early rounds of best ball leagues. And I like stacking, especially Tom Brady, stacking with either Rob Gronkowski that I mentioned, or sometimes Brandon Cooks or Julian Edelman if they fall past their ADP and I take them in that, you know, those zero RB rounds there. So I use a little bit different strategy in best ball leagues than I do in redraft for the quarterback position.
Yeah, one thing I love about Brady this year for best ball, whether it's a 28 round draft like the ones that we have with our friends at the FFPC or a 20 round draft, is that Hogan and Mitchell are almost free, and you can do some really nice stacking late with them. If the ADP doesn't work out, getting Gronk, Edelman, or the third guy you mentioned, Cooks. Now that we have what the basics of zero running back are and how you ideally like to implement it, let's get into why you think zero RB is ideal for 2017. Last year was a historical year for running back touchdown rates. How does that play into the equation?
Yeah, so obviously touchdowns are very important in best ball leagues. They elevate your scoring each week to a new level. If a player gets 1 touchdown, you know, a running back gets a touchdown, he's probably going to be in your best ball lineup that week, you know, when it gets automatically selected, especially if they score 2. And last year, as you mentioned, running backs had one of the highest TD rates of the past decade. And what that did is it caught people's attention. people are now drafting running backs extremely early, earlier than they've drafted in the past two or three years. They're going as early as they've ever gone since best ball leagues have kind of been invented. So that really shifts the calculus on zero RB. If last year when RBs were going as late as ever, it really became a debate on whether zero RB was even viable because running backs are going so late. So not only do running backs go so late, they then put up touchdowns at a historic rate, and running backs just crushed last year in best ball leagues. Now everybody has it on their mind that running backs crushed, and they're taking them very early. So there's this recency bias. There's swings in the market that we're getting from year to year. Maybe the market corrected toward taking wide receiver earlier last year because zero running back crushed 2 years ago, but now robust running back crush last year, so it swung all the way back and then some. So I actually think this could be a very good year for running backs because of the fact that you mentioned the touchdown rate was so high. It's very likely to regress. I did some calculations. If the touchdown rate is a distribution and it continues to follow that distribution in the future, there's a 90% chance the touchdown rate will regress, especially for the running backs in the high leverage rounds, those first five or six rounds of the of best ball league drafts. So very likely touchdown rate will regress, but running backs are being drafted as if that will continue.
Well, and another factor, I mean, there's some first and second round running backs that people like, that I like, but if you look at what happened after the draft, guys like Mark Ingram, Spencer Ware, C.J. Anderson, a lot of the guys who were being drafted in the third, fourth round of best ball leagues had other players added to the equation, dropping their ADP into the sixth, seventh round, which has caused guys like Crowell and Montgomery's ADP to just, move up to fill that gap that was left. And all, so not only are you taking a position that is kind of dangerous, but you're also taking guys who are probably being overdrafted, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, definitely. And it's that knock-on effect is what you're talking about there, that, oh gosh, all of these other running backs went so early, and maybe they deserve to go that early, but it's the knock-on effect of the next chain of running backs who probably don't deserve to go as early, but because people want to grab running backs because they'll feel like they'll get left out of that position, they end up grabbing Crowell in the late third or early fourth. They end up grabbing, somebody like Mark Ingram in the middle of the fifth round or things like that. So, and especially as we've gotten closer and closer to the year, some of these ADPs have risen even further as more of the casual players have tended to play some of these drafts. So definitely that knock-on effect is pushing ADP as early as it's ever been. And multiple people have shown this. I've shown it. I know Graham Barfield has shown this as well. So a lot of people have been looking at this shift in ADP, and that's why I think this really does make for an interesting year to again attack best ball leagues with zero RB.
All right, we'll be right back after a short break. Welcome back. The second point that you made in your article was that the overall NFL trend of run to pass ratio is heading in one direction and not the other. Can you explain to the audience what you meant by that?
Yeah, so the league over multiple years has been trending more towards a pass heavy league. At this point we're now at like a league where more than 60% of the plays are either pass plays or designed to be pass plays if you include sacks and things like that. So it's a very interesting situation because if running backs are actually getting fewer rushes, and maybe getting more targets can be more valuable, but overall their total opportunity is not increasing, it's potentially decreasing, then that is going to again take away from running backs as a whole as well. Now, yes, last year David Johnson, Le'Veon Bell, they were right up there in terms of some of the all-time greats in terms of fantasy scoring, but we can't expect that to continue forever for every running back. Maybe it can continue for Le'Veon and or David Johnson, but we can't expect that to continue. The league just continues to trend towards pass play. Last year, as I mentioned, it was around 60%, 59.3% pass play ratio. So certainly wide receivers are going to be more and more an important part of the game. Tight ends will become more and more an important part of the game. and the actual rushing part of the running backs will become less and less an important part of the game. And that's something that's for 4 years in a row now, or sorry, the fifth year in a row now, we've seen a record low in terms of running back carries. So if that continues to a sixth year in a row, or even if it stays static, running back ADP relative to last year has shifted so much, as we've already talked about, that it's probably overcorrected for the fact that the touches, running back touches, won't necessarily increase. They're either going to stay static or decrease.
Right. And the point that I took out of that was, yeah, it was the year of the running back, but the underlying numbers didn't show a trend towards running backs getting more opportunities. They just happened to have a career year.
Yeah, the touchdown efficiency especially was a big part of that.
Yep. And you mentioned a little bit about running back injuries, but just how unusual was the health of all the top running backs staying healthy last year versus historical averages?
Yeah, last year was certainly a bizarro year in terms of elite running back injuries. So Josh Hermsmeyer, he of the Air Yards at RotoViz, showed last year, but prior to 2016 season, that the reason zero running back works, one of the reasons, is injury rates. And he actually quantified them. And he defined a serious injury as any injury that causes a player to miss four games or more in a row. And what he found is that on average, the top 24 wide receiver injury rate by ADP was around a little over 18%. And the top 24 running back injury rate, and these are both serious injuries, was around 45%. So almost 2.5 times the rate of the wide receivers that running backs would get injured. So he put some 95% confidence intervals to it as well and said the true number lies somewhere between 2 and 3 2/3 the level of running backs. So what we saw last year was really a huge anomaly. Running backs basically got injured right at their lower 95% confidence interval, while wide receivers got injured right at the upper 95% confidence interval. So you're essentially talking a 5 or 10% probability multiplied by a 5 or 10% probability. We're talking a 1 or 2% event here in terms of injury. So last year, if we look at the top 10 running backs, only two of them suffered serious injuries. Adrian Peterson and Jamal Charles, if you want to count him. And then out of the top 24 running backs, only 8 of them got injured. And normally we expect closer to 10, 11, 12 of them to suffer serious injuries. Now, we're not rooting for these, but these are things that just happen. And that is what zero running back is designed to take advantage of. Well, it couldn't take advantage of something that didn't happen last year, at least in terms of normal rates. So that's another reason why zero RB got crushed last year, was because not only did running backs have a very high touchdown rate, but the starting running backs, their total touches went up because they played more games, essentially. So the total league touches for running backs went down, but the starting running back touches probably went up because they weren't missing 5, 6, 7, 8 games at a time. So that was definitely also an anomaly as well. And a 2% event like that, a 1% event like that, is very unlikely to happen again.
What do your numbers show as the ideal rounds to draft running backs this year, and why?
Yeah, so I really like targeting a running back starting in the sixth round. You've got a couple guys there that have a borderline fifth, sixth round ADP. Spencer Ware, for example, we've talked about him a couple times. Amir Abdullah, Mark Ingram. But really one guy I'm looking at is Tevin Coleman, and I like Tevin Coleman in the sixth round of best ball leagues because he will still get his anyway, regardless of if anything happens to Devontae Freeman or not. He'll get his receptions, he'll get rushing yards, and he plays on a very good offense. And if something happens to Devontae Freeman, he could be a top 5 or 6 back this year that's being drafted in the sixth round. What you're doing with Spencer Ware, if you're drafting him in the sixth round, is a little more fragile. We're drafting him in the sixth round because we know that a Kareem Hunt is right there waiting in the wings. We know that the Kansas City offense, while good, isn't maybe necessarily explosive. So even though I like Spencer Ware, he's a very good back. He has much more fragility built around him. So if I'm drafting in the sixth round, I tend to like to draft Tevin Coleman instead of Spencer Ware, even though Spencer Ware actually has the higher projection. And I think the reason is we're wanting to make a more anti-fragile roster than a fragile roster. So I'm usually starting in the sixth round, and I'm usually starting with Tevin Coleman. That said, that's when I go zero RB. I still only go zero RB about 70% of the time this year.
Zero running back is counterintuitive to both how most of us learn to play fantasy football, and on a deeper psychological level, it just feels tough to come out of a draft being unsure of where your running back points are going to come from. Obviously, for those who can get past that fear, zero running back becomes a great opportunity. But for those who might want to get past that emotional hurdle, is there any advice you can give them? Because I feel like acknowledging the fact that there is this mental block to wanting to do zero running back, it's important for many people to get past that block.
Yeah, so this is one thing that Sean Siegel, who I mentioned, is one of the other editor-in-chief at RotoViz, that he talks about a lot with zero RB, and that's really understanding the fact that we're not very good at making projections. We should be humble in that, unless you really are one of the top 5% in player and situational evaluation in terms of, you know, drafting, then really you need to understand the fact that you're probably going to lose more often than you win. And so a way to avoid that is to draft with a zero RB approach. You don't need to rely on projections. You don't need to pick the best players or be the best evaluator. You can understand that by just the simple fact that things are happening negatively to these running backs in the first five or six rounds, your roster is going to get better. So it's really a humiliation, a humble-based approach, that you say, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm not as good as a player evaluator as maybe a lot of these people. So I'm going to pick a strategy. And this is where I really emphasize the word strategy, that will help me take advantage of the fact that we don't know what's going to happen. So not only do I not know where my running back points are going to come from, I also know that the people who do draft in the first five rounds don't necessarily know where their running back points are going to come from, because things like injuries and suspensions and poor performance will happen. And so that can make you feel better that even though you didn't take anybody in the first five rounds, it's no guarantee that those people who did draft backs in the first five rounds will also get that kind of production.
You already mentioned that you do about 70% of your drafts as zero running backs. And earlier this year, you had a really great article. It was based on the fact that you would draft two really good tight ends early and then forget about the position. Why don't you tell people a little bit about your two tight end strategy, and how often out of that last 30% is that something that you use?
Yeah, so in best ball leagues, I actually wrote a article. It was actually called Structural-Based tight end drafting in best ball leagues. And I actually outlined three, tight end strategies that I've been using. One is the two tight end one strategy, which I used in 2016. It actually worked out pretty well because my highest exposure tight ends all performed very well. But the idea is you grab two tight ends that are going to be, a top 12 ADP tight end. And last year I ignored Rob Gronkowski. My calculation showed he was going too early. Worked out well because he didn't do very well last year with the injuries and things like that. But this year Gronk's ADP is adjusted enough that even he pulls back into that category. So really, if you draft any two tight ends between 1 and 12, I think you can stop worrying about the position in best ball leagues. What the advantages of that are not only are they projected to be as good as wide receivers in the same ADP range, but also they allow you to take an extra running back, which can help with a zero RB strategy, because that gives you one extra bullet in terms of maybe a mid or a late round running back that could see explosive results if something happens in the fragile nature of the NFL to a player in front of them on the depth chart. So the very good thing about the two tight end one strategy is that it lets you avoid taking a third tight end, freeing up that extra spot so you can draft one extra running back. And that's why I really like pairing two tight end one with zero RB. You can do two tight end one with basically any strategy. Then there's also a third strategy where you grab three tight ends, and that's if you get a tight end one in the latter half of the tight end one range, so like tight end maybe 5 or 6 through 12, then you can also grab two later tight ends and have three tight ends, and I think that's what you're going to need in best balls if you don't have an earlier tight end one. But other than that, two tight end one I think is very good to pair with zero running back.
Yeah, I like the two tight end, and I like how you explained it, how it is a separate strategy, but that it also fits in really well with a zero RB strategy. So we've gone through most of the basics. I think it's time for us to get Nick's favorite zero running back candidates for this year and where you're finding them at ADP. We already got Coleman. Who else is on your list?
Yeah, next on my list is Duke Johnson. I just really, really like the fact that he's similar to Coleman. He's maybe like Tevin Coleman light in that he gets a lot of usage in the passing game, whereas Coleman just gets a lot of usage in general in Atlanta. Duke Johnson gets a lot of usage in the passing game. And should something ever happen to Isaiah Crowell, Duke Johnson would essentially be the feature back there in Cleveland. So he would get most of the carries, as well as still a lot of the passing work. So Duke Johnson, you can usually get him in the 7th or 8th round of best ball drafts. I don't mind reaching for him because of that upside there. And again, I like the upside that's built in with Duke Johnson. Another favorite of mine who I've started to come around to more recently than previously and earlier in the offseason in best ball drafts is Derrick Henry. And similar situation here. He's a guy that will still get plenty of touches. He was the PPR RB44 last year, so he is going RB28, but what I'm building in is a lot of upside. I want to have upside back, so if something happens to DeMarco Murray, Derrick Henry's the feature back. If something happens to Isaiah Crowell, Duke Johnson is the feature back. Tevin Coleman's the feature back. And they also come with a little bit of safety in that they still have their own work. Duke Johnson still gets the receiving work. Derrick Henry still gets plenty of rushing attempts. Tevin Coleman still gets plenty of rushing and receiving work. So these three are like my ideal three to target right now in best ball drafts in the early portion of the ADP, that 6th, 7th, 8th round of ADP. Do you want me to dive into some later candidates as well?
Well, yeah, we'll do that. But first, I don't have a ton of those guys, but Henry was a guy last year. One of my key takeaways is I was a little too risk intolerant in best ball leagues. So a guy like Derrick Henry, who was going, early on in the sixth, seventh round, I felt it was too early, but I was drafting enough of him that I would at least be even weight because there was news that Murray had that plantar injury that he never had surgery on. He's an older back with a lot of a workload. So you talk about value-based drafting, and it can't be your only guide. A guy like Henry is a guy I never would have drafted in the past, and I'm about even weight on this year. Duke Johnson is the guy who I wish I had. I got on his train right before he started moving up draft boards. And I'm sorry that I missed that, but I think those are some really good candidates, and I think I would like to hear a couple of your later round guys as well.
Sure. So obviously, with the there's three tenets that kind of Sean Siegel highlights for a good zero RB back, and the three things are: A, they should be on an elite offense; B, they should possibly be a pass catching back; and then C, they should have a chance to inherit a very high workload. And so another back that kind of fits that situation is possibly my favorite zero RB back relative to ADP right now of all of them, and that's Rex Burkhead. And this is a guy who also has been coming up in ADP, but I'm okay with that. If I look at the RotoViz Best Ball app, if I just take the last 4 days, his ADP is 165, so that's still very late. The thing I love about Rex Burkhead is he's on the Patriots. You want to talk about a back on a very good offense? He's a back on a very, very good offense. 18 rushing touchdowns for LeGarrette Blount last year. Let's say that number decreases for the Patriots to 14 or 15 rushing touchdowns, and let's say Mike Gillisley gets the bulk of those. That still leaves a few that Rex Burkhead could get, which would give him a few weeks of being flex worthy even in best ball leagues. And if something happens to Gillislee, or if Rex Burkhead is better than we think or used more than we think, he is a guy that could have 6, 7, 8, 10 weeks, something like that, of usage in best ball leagues, depending on how things shake out. So again, there's a lot of upside built into Burkhead at an ADP of 165. So certainly like that. And then there's just some other pass catching backs that I like. Your Giovanni Bernards, who could maybe inherit a bigger workload if something happens to Mixon, or Chris Thompson is a guy who's very safe but doesn't have a ton of upside if things were to happen to either Samaje Perine or Rob Kelly, because they would take each other's workload there. So Thompson's mostly just a pass catching back, but Burkhead is really one of my favorites because of that touchdown upside and the fact that he could get a lot of rushing work should something happen to Gillislee.
Yeah, Burkhead and Bernard are both in my top seven running backs in my best ball exposure. The one guy you didn't mention that I own a lot of is Matt Forte. And then one other guy I'll get your thoughts on that I have a good amount of is Shane Vereen. What are your thoughts on both of those as best ball backs?
Yeah, I like Matt Forte. He's certainly a guy who has been just a stellar running back throughout his career at the Bears and then later, of course, at the Jets. ADP right now, right in the middle of the 10th, or sorry, yeah, in the middle of the 11th round. So I don't mind him there. I tend to find when I do best ball drafts, that's also where I'm trying to draft a quarterback or where I'm trying to maybe draft my last wide receiver that I really want, like a Rishard Matthews, or sometimes Mike Wallace falls there. So it's not that I don't like Matt Forte. Certainly if something were to happen to Bilal Powell, he's going to crush his ADP in terms of value at the end of the year. But he is on an offense that's not very good, and that he falls right in that ADP range where I'm looking to take some other positions and players. So I don't have a ton of exposure to him, but he still is a very good zero running back candidate.
We've talked about your candidates. Let's talk about some of the early running backs that you're really off.
Yeah, so the number one name that jumps out to me is Jay Ajayi. Obviously, he had those three huge games last year, those three 200-yard games. How many of those can we really expect him to have again this year? Maybe one, maybe. I mean, 200-yard games are so rare that, it's not that I don't want to throw him out and say, let's ignore those. But they're just so rare that that's also part of what's pushing up his ADP. Yes, Miami could go pretty run-oriented, especially with Tannehill out, but I just don't think we can expect those kind of explosive games from Ajayi this year, at least especially three of them. And if I use the RotoViz Splits app that we have there, if you take out the three 200-yard games and you take out the three or four games at the beginning of the year where he was not the featured back, he only averaged about 11.5 PPR points per game, which would put him in a flex range in the mid-20s, and he's going 14th-ish, 15th-ish overall right now by flex ADP. So if you take out quarterbacks and defenses and stuff like that, just look at the flex-eligible positions, Jay Ajayi is definitely overvalued. So he's a guy I am avoiding. I'm also avoiding Todd Gurley. I just don't like backs that are on bad offenses, and I think the Rams are going to be quite possibly the worst offense this year. Jared Goff was a disaster last year, which crushed Todd Gurley. He was going as the RB1 or 2 in best ball leagues last year. He's going RB10 now. I think that's respectable. I'm just not on backs in that second round, third round range that are on bad offenses. I'd rather just take a wide receiver on a good offense. It's much safer, a much more much less risky proposition there. Taking somebody like Doug Baldwin, who will get his. He's the lead guy on a high-powered offense in Seattle, hyper-efficient, has been efficient every year in a stable situation with Russell Wilson. Give me Doug Baldwin all day over Todd Gurley. Their ADPs are basically identical.
Nick, thank you very much. This was great information. I really appreciate you coming on the Best Ball Show.
Anytime, Todd. It was a lot of fun, and I'm just ready for the season to start.
We love football, and that's why we all do this.
That's right. So we'll have to see how everything shakes out. But like I said, I like doing zero RB about 70% of my drafts. But if I'm drafting 101, I'm still taking David Johnson.
I don't think there's any doubt on that one. The last thing I'll say is I do like Jay Ajayi. Maybe we could have you on for a battle article for my ADP series on RotoViz. That'll do it for this episode. And I want to thank my guest, Nick Giffen. You can find him on Twitter at RotoDoc. And I'm Todd Burrows. You can find me on Twitter at ToddFromPA. Thank you for listening to The Best Ball Show, a special RotoViz radio miniseries. Please rate and review the RotoViz radio podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Contact us via email at rotovizradio@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter at @RotoVizRadio. And remember, you can always support the pod by subscribing to RotoViz at a 30% discount through the RotoViz Radio homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.